Welcome to the Intelligent Investing Podcast, where modern portfolio theory can suck it. A student of the school of Graham and Doddsville and a clergy member of the Church of Warren Buffett. Here's your host, Eric Schlein.
Hi, this is Eric Schlein. You are listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast. Today, we are going back up to my French Canadian. You are French Canadian, Brian, right?
I'm French Canadian. That's right.
I just felt like a dick to just assume you were French because you're from Canada, but you sound French, so it'd be weird if you spoke French. You sound French, but you weren't French Canadian. But I didn't know. So, my French Canadian friend Brian Lingus, and I always want to say Lingois when I talk to you. It just sounds more French than Lingus.
Langes.
Langes. Okay, cool.
Langes, yeah.
My friend Brian Langes, from Canada, and we are here to talk about a bunch of different things. As some of you might know, Brian's been on the show before. He's a pretty rad, awesome guest. We met in Los Angeles, right, at the Daily Journal meeting in February.
That's right.
Yeah, on right for Valentine's Day to hang out with our good friend Charlie, and. You know it's a conference for nerds when they have it on Valentine's Day, right?
Yeah, it's a very, very small group of people that you have to be a little bit of an insider in the value investment circle to make it there.
Yes, and if you're not single, the person you're with has to be quite understanding that you want to go hang out with a 90-year-old for Valentine's Day.
94.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. So I thought we should go over a few things. You had some interesting insights on the whole marijuana industry, and I wanted to. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there. Can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay. Thought I lost you for a second. There's a lot of stuff out there on the marijuana industry. That's kind of like basic, and I feel like the articles that you read are either like, well, marijuana is a hot thing, get in while it's hot, or it's like, all these stocks are expensive, short them. So there's not really much substance. And I wanted to do a show today with you where we actually brought some substance and hopefully had one of the most meaty podcasts about something like that, and maybe if you want to do an article with this, that could be a cool combo, like we did with with Brookfield.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Or no, with Tesla. I apologize, with Tesla.
Yeah.
And then maybe we could just do a little bit of recap on Brookfield and Tesla too, since it's been a few months since we spoke about them, and there's been some stuff going on with both. How does that sound to you? Does that work?
Yeah. Well, yeah, Eric, first, thanks for having me on a third time.
Of course.
This is fun. It's a lot of fun. You're right. We did my first podcast with you was with we talked about Brookfield Asset Management, the Canadian, global, asset manager. Mm-hmm. And then we also did one with Tesla. And just to do a little recap.
Yeah, let's just do a brief recap on both of those before we get into marijuana. Does that work?
Yeah, we can do that.
All right, cool. And you're more than welcome to do the Elon Musk thing and smoke pot on the show. You could even pretend, and nobody will even know that you're pretending because there's no video. Yeah. So,
well, I'm not a director of a public company yet.
No, you're not, and I'm not the Joe Rogan show, so you may have less listeners. Probably will if I had to make a bet on it. But for all intents and purposes, you can inhale and no one will know if you're actually inhaling anything. So have fun. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about these two companies. Like, I knew I was going to do the podcast with you. And
Hold on. And okay, go ahead.
I knew I was going to do the podcast with you. And, our first two podcasts are, when you think about the companies we talked about, couldn't be any more different in quality and what they are. The first one, BAM, Brookfield Asset Management, is a very conservative company, very low key under the radar. Not a lot of people know about it, and this company's been providing returns in the average of 50% for the last forever years. Very consistent, very good company. And just, I think, yeah, last week, they just had their investor day in New York. And if you go through their investor website, the investor relation, you know, Brookfield, they have all the presentations of all their all the companies, infrastructure, energy, real estate, and they had a whole day on that. And you know how, you know, Bruce Flatt, they also provide their own valuation framework, how to look at a company. And when we talked about it, the company was around $40 US, and now it's about 44 and a half. So I guess that, you know, in 2 months, if your listeners have paid attention, they would have made 10%. So they're 10% richer. And then when you look at the other podcast, which was Tesla, and we tried to look at it from so many different angles, the good, the bad, the ugly. And that was at the end of July, right? Mid-July, the end of July. And it's crazy how much has happened since then. Because I was getting some notes ready to talk about you, and I was on vacation too, and there's all these things going on. And it's a company, just by, you know, following the news of this company for like a day or two, you would think you'd miss a year of news. You know, you log in, you go to Tesla, you check out the news, and there's like, what's going on here? And right after we did the podcast, I think it's a couple of days later, he came out with his infamous tweet, the 420 tweet, where he said that, what do you say, funding secured, right? He said he had a buyer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, he said he had a buyer, and that, you know, the money was locked up, and then a week later he said no, none of this, and we're staying public. And you've seen this stock go up and down, up and down, investigation and problems, and him tweeting crazy stuff.
And what speaks to the cult mentality of it is, I actually had someone, I had posted a thing on Facebook.
Yeah.
About how much I love arbitrage, and someone, I'm not gonna say who it was, but someone I knew he was a Tesla shareholder, made a comment, and he said something like, yeah, like I'm paraphrasing, but he was like, I like Tesla too, I like arbitrage too, I think I own Tesla, and it could be I'm doing an arbitrage investment with them, and I just was like, you got to be kidding me if you think that's arbitrage. So
yeah, but I mean, this company, it's so resilient, and it's still at $293. I have it in front of me right now, and I think it was at 300 when we did the podcast, and then it went down, it went up to almost 400,
right,
and it crashed, and it came back. You know, forget all the good stuff and the bad stuff. I don't know why that you want to be a shareholder in there in such a volatile, crazy, you know, company when there's so much other things out there that you could look at that are cheaper, you know, if you look at valuation metrics. But, you know, I was on vacation. I'm like, imagine if I was actually a shareholder or I decided to short sell it. I can't. It's too crazy.
You would not be able to sleep at night.
No, it's impossible, because it's one day it's perfect, the next day it's hell, and you would think the company will bankrupt, and the next day, you know, the Saudis are after the company. It's just, I like to watch it. It's a good show, but it's not for me.
It's a wonderful show.
It makes great podcast material, let me tell you that.
Yes, it'll make a good movie someday, too.
Oh yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. Who do you think is going to play Elon Musk?
Matt Damon.
Matt Damon.
I could see, right? Matt Damon could be like a kind of Elon Musk, a little makeup on.
I don't know. I don't know
who would you put as Elon Musk?
And, you know, it sounds bad. I don't know why, but the first name that came to my mind was Tom Cruise.
Yeah, I could see Tom Cruise too.
No, I can't tell you why. That's the name that popped in my head.
I'll tell you why. Is that Tom Cruise has like small eyes, and so does Elon Musk.
I guess, does it? Yeah. Can Tom Cruise play a South African accent?
Probably. He's Tom Cruise. He can do anything.
It's Tom Cruise.
It's Tom Cruise, right?
There's nothing such. There's no such thing as a Mission Impossible, right?
Exactly.
There's a little play on words right there.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Cruise. Okay.
Yeah.
Your audience just tripled.
Or they left.
Oh yeah.
It's one or the other.
Yeah, it could be really be good.
We might
really
just be talking to nobody. We might be talking to
right,
a wall.
Right. People listening to their car, they just turn it off. You went to the radio.
All right, back to Brookfield and Tesla.
Right. Well, yeah, these, that's it. They're two companies that can't be any more opposites in their style. And you know, I still believe Brookfield showed that they're still undervalued.
Well, their most recent quarter, did you read the Bruce Flatt's letter?
No.
You should read it.
No, Q2. You know, the end of June?
I don't remember. I can tell you.
That would be the end of June. I think I read it, yeah.
Did you? It was unbelievable. I'm Googling this right now. But,
yeah, I probably read it. Because we did the podcast the end of June or July. I probably read it.
Hold on a second. I'm just going to go onto the Brookfield website. And so if I go
to... Yeah, he does quarterly letters, and it's good.
Well, they had their Investor Day, 2018 Investor Day, on September 26th.
That's last week?
Yeah, and they showed that all the projections they had made the past 5 years, that they were too conservative, which is typically a thing.
Yeah, they're very prudent about that. I think they do it on purpose. One, it looks better, right? It's like a doctor that tells you you have a month left, and then you live for 6 months. He looks like a hero, right?
Yeah. And also, August 9th is the letter, the second quarter letter from Brookfield. It was one of the better letters he's written.
No, I'll read it. I don't think I read it that
you
one.
You should. There's actually a lot. There was a lot of new stuff. I'm gonna put a link to it in the show notes because it was that good, in my opinion.
Oh yeah,
and he actually breaks out. So he talks about some of the stuff we were talking about in the podcast. He breaks out. All right, so I'm gonna read just one part of the letter where he actually goes into how he values his own company.
Yes,
He does it very specifically, so it's better than just like looking at a presentation. So he says, the continued growth of our asset management business and fee-bearing capital provides us with cash flows that are diverse, covering our different fund strategies and publicly listed partnerships, sticky as the capital is invested across durations, ranging from our private funds of 10 plus years to our permanent capital vehicles, and fast growing as we increase our fee-bearing capital at a considerable rate. Over the last 5 years, fee-related earnings have grown at a compounded rate of 34%. He didn't say fucking, I'm just saying fucking. But 34%, and we believe we can grow and achieve at a rate of more than 20% over the next 5 years. And just for people listening to that, that is like, how can a company that big grow that fast? You're dealing with a multi-trillion-dollar industry here with infrastructure, real assets. A lot of people have a hard time putting their heads around that.
It is.
And then I'll just continue. So unrealized carried interest was $2.5 billion at the quarter end, and we expect to recognize about a half of this in the next few years. Which is insane. Our current carry eligible capital of $47 billion means that our target carried interest net of cost is now $800 million annually based on target returns. There will be a timing lag between when this carried interest is generated and when it is realized, as we wait for clawback provisions to be met before recording it as income in our financial statements. We will continue to report our progress against this target in our supplemental information. Now here's where he goes into the valuation. The total equity across Brookfield is approximately $80 billion, and the equity market capitalization for BAM, Brookfield Asset Management, common shares, is currently approximately $40 billion. So the $40 billion can be broken into two components: our net tangible invested capital and our asset management business. Taking IFRS values for our non-listed assets and real estate businesses and using stock market prices for our other listed investments, the total tangible invested capital was $40 billion at the end of the second quarter. And that's after deducting $10 billion of long-term debt and perpetual shares, net invested capital was $30 billion. This scenario implies that $10 billion is being attributed to our asset management business. In our view, and this is to me the big kicker for the valuation.
$10 billion has been attributed to the asset management business.
But this is what that means. So in our view, well, right, because you have the $40 billion in invested capital minus
right. $10 billion. Well, I mean, it's very low.
Right. So
it sounds like a very low number.
So yes. So in our view, this represents an extremely low value based on the underlying financial metrics and the way most investors value similar businesses. For example, this value represents 10 times our current estimate of annualized fee-related net earnings, approximately $1 billion, with no value attributed to the gross carried interest of $8 billion that we stand to earn over the next 10 years if we achieve target returns. This is also based only on funds raised to date, with nothing attributed to our ability to grow our franchise. Stated differently, if our shares reflected a 20 times multiple for fee-related earnings and a 10 times multiple for net annualized carry on existing funds, this would add $18 billion of value or $18 a share. This is close to a 50% increase over current stock market prices, right. And this still has no value attributed to the growth in our future franchise, including larger and new funds.
I have to read this.
Yeah, and then he breaks down the returns since 1999 with book value, market price, FFO, market price plus dividends. It's and goes into shares outstanding growth and book value growth, assets under management growth. Well, it's pretty cool.
Well, like we talked about, part of the discount is trying to figure out this company.
Yeah. So I want to point to one more thing too. And I want to do a brief recap, but there's a lot of stuff that's happened with Brookfield. So I just want to go to the Brookfield Asset Management presentation. I'm going to put this in the link too. It's 119 pages, so I'm not going to go through all 119.
This is from the Investor Day?
This is from the Investor Day.
Yeah, I saw that one.
So right? Yeah, and I want to go over one thing which I thought was very interesting. I'm just scrolling through over 100 pages right now, so give me 30 seconds. Why don't you just sing or something, Brian, to do some waiting music.
I don't want to scare the people reminding of this. We went from a million listeners to
five.
Yeah, I don't want to lose these five.
Right
now
five
they're Brookfield nerds. Well, talking about Bruce Flatt, I think you're the one who sent me that. It was the Google presentation. You know how Google have these talks? They have these guests that goes to Google and they do like an hour long presentation.
Yeah,
you sent me that and I put it on my blog. It was Bruce Flatt, which as you know, does not make a lot of public appearance, does not do a lot of media. He does, but not a lot. And he was invited at Google to do a talk on his company, Brookfield. And I think it was something on how to value investing in real assets. So you talk about real estate, infrastructure, and all that stuff. And this is one of the best investors in the world, right? One investor with the biggest track record. And I think there was like 15 people there.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, you have the opportunity to... I don't know if it was promoted. People don't know where Brookfield is. Mm-hmm. It's part of all that, but I'm sure if this guy was properly promoted, I mean, he could fill an arena. But
he doesn't want to do that.
No.
So I just want to turn. So if any of the listeners are actually on the presentation, on page 108, it says planned value results in $118 per share over the next 5 years, and it's the same valuation he's been using for years. But he goes.
Oh yeah, I saw that slide.
Right. So you assume a 20x multiple on fee related earnings, 10x multiple on generate carried interest, and these are to be honest, the multiples are not conservative. I mean, they're pretty, I would say, just fair. But the numbers have been conservative in the past, and you kind of have to trust the management on that. But he's, you know, he's basically giving a 5-year intrinsic value of $118 a share, based and that includes dividends. And right now the price at this point was $42 a share as of September 14th. But what's also interesting, if you go to page 112 on the slide, he goes looking out 10 years and he says fee related earnings, $20 billion, net invested capital, $25 billion, realized carried interest, $15 billion. So that's $60 billion.
I love these round numbers.
Yeah. So here's what's interesting. Cash investment into listed partnership, negative $10 billion. Return of capital through dividends, negative $10 billion. That means over the next 10 years, he's estimating there will be an additional $40 billion of excess capital for share repurchases.
Hey, that's buying back the whole company.
Which is literally the entire market cap right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I've heard some talk, too, which... You know, it's like, well, if you want to buy back stock, why are you talking about the valuation and showing it's cheap? But I think if you were to ask him that without him being on the show, I mean, clearly these presentations haven't moved the market in the past. I just don't think he expects this stuff to move the market. So he's basically outlining the shareholders like, hey, this is how I see it, and this is why I'm going to buy back stock. And, you know, he's just laying it out for shareholders.
Well, he's a capital allocator. I mean... I've been invested in Brookfield since 2012.
Okay.
Yeah. And, I mean, the returns have been great, and this company I've been following for a long time. And I'm not cashing out. Let them do their thing. You know, it's a buy and hold. And, you know, it's not an easy company to value. You can't trust its valuation, or you can adjust it. But even if you adjust it downward, you're not paying through the roof here.
No, it's, yeah. I think you could say conservative. This is just my personal view, right?
This
is not a recommendation, but I see it as, even if you're wrong, you're probably getting a very fair valuation of the company, which over 20 years, you're going to do quite well.
For sure. Yeah.
I'd be careful. I would not say for sure. There's nothing's a for sure in this world.
No. Exactly, but you can make a good judgment, right?
You
can make analysis and have good judgment. I mean, between Tesla and marijuana, I would put my money on Brookfield.
That's fair. Between Tesla and marijuana, I would take Brookfield.
And the money you make with Brookfield, maybe you can buy a Tesla.
Yeah, exactly. Why don't we go? Why don't we move on to marijuana?
Sure. All right. So, as you know,
this is gonna be the investor's guide to marijuana. Right now,
right.
Let's start that segment.
All right. So let's start with this. I'm in Canada, and I got a front row seat to the legalization of marijuana for recreational purposes, so for fun.
Recreational?
Yep.
How did you say it?
Oh, boy. recreational? Recreational. Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Big word for me. So the landscape for marijuana is very different in Canada than the U.S. Canada always had... lax attitude towards it. It's been legal for medicinal purposes since 2001. Mm-hmm. You know, cops, law enforcement agencies were never hard on you. They would go after setters and growers, but if they caught you with it, or if you're smoking it and all that stuff, they wouldn't buck people about it. You know, they have better things to do with their time. And also, the previous government, a conservative government under Prime Minister Harper, issued something. You could get a license to grow it, okay? So it basically was a 2-page form. You fill it out. You send it to Health Canada. And unless you have a sketchy story, or you had a criminal record or something, you would get a license to grow. Just say you're allowed to grow X amount of plants or X amount of grams or quantity. The idea at the time was to, stamp out the black market. What happened, it made it worse because it wasn't really regulated. So I could apply. I mean, I had friends who had the license. You get the license and you grow up, but nobody's watching how many plants, how much quantity. Oh, and you could only sell it to people with a prescription. But who's watching, right? Mm-hmm. So thousands of people had the license. How many people actually follow the guideline, the rules? You know, who knows? And this stuff, like, it wasn't like you needed a different, like a business or a warehouse. No, you could grow it at home. So you have all these nice homes, suburbs, whatever, and the cops would do a raid and be like, hey, what are you doing? I have a license. And be like, oh, sorry. So the whole thing was out of whack. So they decided in 2014 or 2015 to upgrade the license to what we have now. So basically, they were changing the game. If you wanted to be a marijuana player, you were one, have a real place of business, a real facility, security, guards, camera, the whole nine yards, right? We're talking about $1 million in investment to grow. And then, and we went from like 1,500, 2,000 or more license to none. So right now we have about 120 licensed growers in Canada. These are both, medicinal and recreational purposes. And that number is growing. And the big date in Canada is in about 2 weeks, October 17. That's when it becomes fully legal for everybody. Right now, everybody with a prescription can order it on the internet, and that's not going to change. I don't know if it's the same thing in the United States, but here to get a marijuana prescription is pretty easy. You go to the doctor, you say you have anxiety issues, and you get one. Okay. So that was the game. And that's not going to change, but now you won't need a license. And the federal government is controlling production and who gets licensing, and the provincial government is in control of distribution and retail. So how it's going to be sold, how you're going to buy it, and how are they going to sell it. So every province is going to have their own rules about it. Just like in the United States right now, every state have some kind of law against it or different system. And, United States, federally, it's still a Schedule I drug. It's illegal. But at the state level, you get a different story. I think you have 30 states they have some form of medicinal or recreational legalization. But I'm not up to date with what's going on in the United States. But the attitude is changing. So what's going on in Canada? It's not, we were talking about taking the market away from the black market. Mm-hmm. Are they going to be able to do that? Not the first year. It's going to take a while. The black market, especially for marijuana, is well supplied and their prices are very competitive. And from what I talked to people and they said the quality of the product is great. It's not.
For the legal or the black market?
The black market. The black market stuff, I mean, these guys have been growing weed forever. And, today's weed is not your parents' weed. That's the joke, right? Mm-hmm. And so that market is highly competitive. And the problem with the government coming in, trying to sell it themselves, because let's say Quebec is going to be a government-controlled store. Mm-hmm. And so you have to go to the government store and buy it. And, their prices per gram might be in the ballpark, but once you add the taxes and all that stuff, they're not in the game. So they might be able to get your casual smoker, but for the guy that smokes every day, all the time. They're not going to quit their dealer. For one, it's their dealer. And two, prices, the government is not in the game yet. So it might be a couple of years before they really take the black market away. Also, what you're seeing is the dry cannabis, right? What you call the commodity. This is going to be a hard game because basically, what the companies are producing, it's the cannabis. And what the black market's producing, it's the same thing. So, there's even if you come up with a brand and all the fancy labeling and packaging and marketing, you're still buying a commodity. So, what a lot of these big producers in Canada are doing, the big market is in derived products. So, edibles, drinkables, medicinal. This is where, the money is going to be in. Because in the dry stuff, you're competing with a lot of people. There's going to be a lot of supply. Mm-hmm. And maybe the market's going to be flooded. I don't know. Nobody really knows what's going to happen on the 17th, the market's going to react. But if you look at what happened in Washington and Colorado when it first came out. So what happened is that there was lack of supply, at the beginning, price exploded, and then there was a flood of supply. And then since 2015, prices have been dropping for over 10% a year. So, people trying to get in the market and hustle with the price of cannabis and all that stuff. There's not much, I don't know how much margin and how much money they're gonna make in there. So what they're doing, they're focusing on derived product like oils and products that are derived from the oil that have one of value added, and you probably can set a higher margin, and you can really differentiate yourself. You can really differentiate yourself from, let's say, another guy, because it's a very different product, right? Because under the current system, when it becomes legal, the 17th, I'm allowed to have 4 plants at home. That's how loose it is. I can grow 4 plants at home, and who knows how good it's. I have no clue, but it's so the dry stuff is going to be everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so my point was, yes, Canada's trying to attack the black market, but it's bigger than that. It's really about becoming having that first mover advantage. Okay. Canada is the second country in the world to legalize marijuana. Uruguay did it in 2013, I believe.
Didn't Portugal do it too?
Portugal, what they did, they decriminalize it. Okay. That means if you have it, they don't arrest you.
Right, okay.
But it's not fully legal.
So it's not legal, okay, got it.
Right. So what happened is, and Canada's going to be the first developed country, the first G7 country, maybe G20, to have the fully legal system. And so other markets, other countries are watching what's going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. Taxes, black market, research and development, how are we going to react? Is it going to be a problem? Is it not going to be a problem? Because right now the conversation we're having in Canada is not, is weed bad or is weed should be legal or illegal? That conversation has been gone years ago. The conversation we're having now is, how are people going to smoke in parks? Are people going to smoke in restaurants? Are people going to, you know what I mean? Now the conversation is like, yeah, we know it's coming. You know it's going to be legal. That's fine. But how are you going to stop people who are driving high, let's say, Mm-hmm. So that conversation is really about, I don't want my children to go to the park and there's a bunch of people smoking weed. People accept that it's legal, but they're less, they want it to be treated like alcohol. You don't want to go to the park and there's a bunch of people drinking when your kids are playing. So that's, I think that's where it's going to be. on that side, I don't know how. I hope that's the case. I hope it's not like super loose, you know, that people are the restaurant smoking it or just outside. But I hope it's controlled in some degree anyway. And I think people are adults about it. You know, people who didn't smoke are not going to rush to the store when they're 17. It's not like you never had access to it before, right? It's everywhere. It's, you know, people smoke it everywhere. There's plenty of it. So it's not all you're doing is you know, making something that is very available legal. That's it. And now the game here is becoming the world's preferred supplier. So all these companies, they have a way bigger ambitions than just Canada, because yeah, we might be big, but we only have 34 million people, 35 maybe, right? So we're one tenth the size of the U.S. population. So U.S. is what, 250 million more or less?
Not exactly. People? I don't know.
So I think
it's more than that.
Yeah, so you count illegals.
No, let's see. It's 325 million as of 2020.
325 million, okay. So,
yeah, 2018 was 326,746,748 people.
Right. So, what Canada's trying to be, they're trying to be the head. The leader in supply, in production, in research, especially on the medical side of it, where there's huge advancement right now. Mm-hmm. And by having a head start of a couple of years, on other countries, what you're getting is that you're getting a lot of investments in Canada, especially from the United States, and you're getting these companies to develop network and partnerships in other countries. So imagine if you are, you know, all these companies have ambitions. For example, the biggest one is Canopy Growth, and you know, I saw a very interesting presentation by the CEO where he talks about he takes a bottle it takes a bottle of vodka, right? And there's no labels on it. It's just a bottle, a clear bottle. And he's explaining right now, this is marijuana in Canada. There's no brands. There's no brand loyalty. The perception of the product is bad. But now what I'm trying to do is just take this bottle of vodka, you know, a commodity, and just put a label on it. And all of a sudden, what he's trying to achieve is that your accountants on Friday night, instead of sipping on a bottle of wine, well, they're going to have tweed. They're going to be smoking tweed, one of the brands that Canopy Growth is offering. And it's going to be totally socially acceptable, instead of having weed being attached to, losers, stoners. But now they're trying to make it, hey, you know what, accountants and professionals and, you know, people that you know, whatever you want to call them, are into that stuff. And they say, well, look, you know, compared to alcohol can be fun, but it's not good for your health.
Sure.
And you get hungover and all that stuff. It's like weed is fun, and there's no hungovers, and there's a medicinal purposes to it. So that's, you know, that's the play here. So it might take years to shake up the image, but you know, we'll see what happens. And what makes Canada an interesting place to invest is that in the U.S., due to federal regulation, a U.S. company or a U.S. listed stock cannot have any operations in the U.S. without losing their listing. So do you follow me? A U.S. company can't be listed in the U.S. because weed is illegal. So what they do is that they list in Canada.
Right.
And if you list in Canada, you can have operations in the United States. So it's kind of like a backdoor, you know what I mean? It's kind of bypassing the system. Mm-hmm. So that's why there's a little bit of a gray zone in the United States. If you follow the rule of the law, you can't. But if you follow the rule of the law of Canada, you can.
Yeah.
So what is it, right? And MedMen Enterprises, which called itself the largest weed company in the United States, is listed on the Canadian Securities Exchange. Now, for listeners, Canadian-American, they're not very aware of this exchange. So in Canada, you have the TSX, the Toronto Stock Exchange, which is the big boy.
Yep.
It's the New York Stock Exchange of Canada, the NASDAQ, whatever. So that's where all the big companies are listed. And then you have a junior exchange called the Toronto Stock Exchange Venture,
mm-hmm.
which is junior companies, companies raising capital.
A lot of those small mining companies.
Right, right, that's right. And the hope of these companies is to graduate to the big one, the TSX. And then we have an exchange that's even smaller, even junior. It's called the CSE, the Canadian Stock Exchange, where a lot of companies can get their start there. It's a fun. If you go on the website, it's not a good website, but if you go on it, it's two things: marijuana stocks and Bitcoin stock or cryptocurrency stocks. That's all they are. They build themselves the exchange for entrepreneurs, right? They like, oh, you're a new guy, getting started, you need money, come to us. But on the street, the joke is they're all the cannabis or the cryptocurrency exchange. That's what they are. There's less than 400 stocks. None of them are close to a billion in valuation.
Yeah,
and I think cannabis stocks is like 20% or 25% of the listings, and half the trading is wheat based businesses. So they're not there because you know that's the place to be. They get started there.
Just so you know, they have a workshop. They have upcoming events, and there's one on October 16th, and it's cannabis workshop, taking your cannabis company public and preparing for legalization.
There we go.
Yeah, it's very cool.
There we go. So the idea is to get uplisted to the TSX and the TSX Venture, sorry. And once you're the TSX Venture and you become credible and legit, then you get uplisted to the TSX. One of the advantages on being on the CSE is that especially when you're new, you don't have us. You know, the listing is cheaper, and the regulatory environments and all the filings and these things is less. There's less requirements, so it's easier to get started. But again, it's you know you have to do your homework. It's not you know there's a lot of crap on there, so you have to pick and choose. Yeah, the big opportunity in marijuana is the medical opportunity. We know that millions of people are already using medical cannabis to treat different conditions, and there's not a lot of research that you know people agree in general. It helps me with pain. It helps me with this. It helps me with that. But there's no. There hasn't been much research, right? And the stuff that you find is usually sketchy. But in general, in common sense, people all agree, yeah, it helps me with so many things. But there hasn't been, you know, anything publicized. So, but now there's a lot of research, especially you know, the campaign to allow marijuana products for medicinal purposes is gathering pace. And it's one of the biggest upside in the industry. So if I was looking at it from an investor point of view, I would be doing my research in that field. Which one can come up with, you know, products that would help people. And now it's going to be hard to pronounce the compound in weed that most of the research is focusing on. It's called cannabinoids. Cannabinoids. I may mispronounce that, but it's labeled CBD, right?
When you get CBD oil or something like that.
Right. So you know, THC is the ingredient that it's the high, right? So when you're looking for weed, you're looking at the THC content, which, you know, the higher it is, the higher you get. CBD is the compound without the high. And this is where the opportunity to support grow on the medicine side of the industry. For example, in the United States, the FDA has recently approved a drug by this, I think it's British, GW Pharmaceutical. They have approved a drug called Epidiolex. Epidiolex, so Epidiolex. This drug got the green light from the government. And what they do is that the what does it do? It helps kids with epilepsy.
Yeah, epilepsy.
It helps kids with their epilepsy symptoms. And now that the FDA has approved that drug, you can buy it in the United States. This should open a door to like an avalanche of like a snowball effect of research, money, companies trying to develop products. And a lot of research right now is really focusing on developing, you know, IP, intellectual property around the CBD compound, which can be turned into a drug or treatment. I think this is where the multi-billion dollar industry is and opportunity could be. It's less the dry cannabis, you know, the commodity. And I think if they're able to create, you know, a patent or a pill or a treatment, it's really hard to take that away from you. Uh-huh. And, you know, then you got insurance company getting involved and all that stuff. So it could be really, really interesting. I mentioned United States, you know, I'm not telling you anything different. If I tell you, I don't know what's going on in the United States. The federal government says it's illegal, and the states are, I think you have elections. Well, you have election coming up in a month, and they're saying, again, it's on the ballot, right? Do you want to legalize it? Do you want to legalize it? Do you want to legalize it? And the Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, he's a big time hater of the marijuana business.
I think that's an understatement.
He was quoted saying good people don't smoke marijuana. But at the same time, Trump is against it, but he hasn't stepped in the way of the state. So he pretty much...
And what's interesting is that when he was running, he was actually pretty adamant against the war on drugs, and if I recall correctly, he even brought Roger Stone on to help him with that, and Roger Stone is very against the war on drugs, so who the hell knows what actually is going on and what he is actually thinking.
Yeah, he's a hard guy to follow.
Just a little bit.
Well, I mean, he changes position on issues 3 or 4 times a day. It's really hard to follow, but... right now, it appears that he's getting out of state's way. He said he'll let them decide how to regulate the drug. Mm-hmm. So, what I find crazy, I mean, people can have different opinions about marijuana and all that stuff, which is fine. But what I find crazy in this state, it's classified as a Schedule I drug. Now, I don't know if you know what that means, but it's the
worst. I don't think most rational people agree with that.
Yeah, so just to compare, cocaine, meth, oxycodone, Schedule II. So, I mean, there's you can argue, you know, which... So they're saying that marijuana is worse than meth. But when you look at how...
That statement is so absurdly stupid, I'm not going to even respond to it.
Yeah. So, you know, okay, so why am I bringing this up? Why is this important? if you are on a Schedule One drugs, it means that companies have to follow the law. And U.S. banks, investors, credit card companies, you know, they can't do business with you. And you can't have a bank account. And if you can't have a bank account, that's hard to do business. So that's why they need to work on changing where it's scheduled. And it's been challenged in the past, and it hasn't been successful. And the reason the schedules are the way it is that there's no if you're a compound, sorry, not compound, Schedule One drug, it means that there's no medicinal benefits, which it turns out it's changed. We know it's not true, but right now they're saying there's no medicinal benefits of that drug, so it's a Schedule One. But for some, you know, heroin has medicinal value, cocaine, all that stuff, but I Oxycontin, but I'm not sure how meth fits in there. But anyway, it's not a podcast on that. So the point I'm making is that the trend is changing in the United States. The Americans, they're changing their mind, and I think public's opinion is turning sharply against prohibition, and they're probably, you know, leaning towards, or they're probably favoring legalization over time. I don't know what, I mean, you're in the States, you probably have a better idea of the trend over there, but I don't think it's reversing. You know, when you see what Colorado has, the jobs it created, the amount of taxes it brought in, you know, you got people cutting marijuana lease with $25 an hour. I mean, it's you know, it's generating jobs, it's generating income, taxes. So it's hard to fight against that. And if it means for a prediction, if it means that, look, if I'm improving this, it means I'm staying in power, it's good for my survival, then they'll probably go that way. But I think you're a couple of years away in the United States. It'll probably be a Democratic government if there's ever one. I don't know. We'll see.
Go ahead.
No, sorry. I mean, I've been talking nonstop. No, I don't know if you have a question or...
Well, in terms of actual publicly traded marijuana companies, do any of them, you know, do you see any of them as viable investments, or is it all gambling? What's your take on that?
Just to make sure that the listeners, I'm not endorsing any of these companies. I'm not an investor. Beware, they are a sky high level. Play on word there, right? They're a really high level.
Yeah, very, very high.
Yeah, it's the big buzz around the industry. I wouldn't even touch them. I'm not saying they're bad companies, but as a valuation guy, the difference between value and price, and all I'm suggesting is if you decide to invest in one of them, do your valuation, do your homework, use judgment.
Can you really do a proper valuation on these things, or do you really have to approach it more like a venture capitalist?
Oh, totally like a VC. Totally. You can't that's financial different. Model it.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Growth rates are too high for a lot of these.
We don't know. I mean, it's going to be legal in the 17, and we barely know anything, honestly. I called, and in preparing for this podcast, I called Canopy last week, and I'm like, hey, what's going to happen on the 17? I said, they don't know. They're like, I don't know. And that's the biggest one. Canopy Grow is the most legit of all.
Yeah.
We're here. Let's talk about them. Canopy Grow had a head start over everybody else. There used to be known as Tweed, and it's a nice little story. We had Ottawa, the capital. An hour south of Ottawa is a town called Smiths Falls. Smiths Falls is a good old school industrial town where they used to do manufacturing, good old jobs, right? And a lot of these jobs are gone. And in the 2000s, I don't remember the year exactly, maybe 10 years ago, there was a Hershey chocolate factory, and they closed down. And that was a major employer in the town. It hurt the town a lot. And a company called Twee, which is now renamed Canopy Grow, bought it, bought the factory, the old factory. And they turned the chocolate factory into the biggest marijuana company in the world. So good for them. Canopy Grow, First Last. These guys are ahead of the game. They're in a lot of field. They're the biggest. They have access to capital. They produce weed. They have a lot of it. They're in the medical sector. They are all over the world. I think they're very well managed. Look, this company is the real deal. I'm telling you all these things, all positive. But the thing is, it's the valuation.
Right.
How much are you willing to pay for it? So let's work some numbers here. The company's worth like $15 billion. Let me just check here. It changed a lot. It's worth $14 billion right now. Right. It's at $62. It was $70 last week, just to give you an idea. A share.
Mm-hmm.
And Canopy is, I think, it's one of the two or three companies in Canada that's also listed in the United States. Not a lot of them. They have dual listing. So these guys, talking about valuation. So once the market in Canada is fully legal, they think it's a $9 billion market. They say it's going to take a couple years, you know, for the legal space to crush the black market space. And once everything is running and going, it's going to be a $9 billion market.
Mm-hmm.
Canopy is worth 14. Okay? If you take all the big marijuana companies in Canada and related stocks, we're talking about a market cap of $60 billion. We have a market cap of $60 billion with a potential $9 billion industry. So that, you know, I mean, you just see how out of whack it is, right?
Right, yep.
So, and Canopy Grow is just going to have a portion of that, maybe, you know, a good size of it. But what is it? What is the, where's the opportunity? So they're looking at international. They're not just looking at Canada, because obviously Canada is just a drop in the bucket. We're such a small country. Yes, we consume weed, but on the world market, we're nothing. So they're really looking at the international opportunities, and they're really looking at the United States. Once the day that it becomes legal, they're ready, right? They're not, mm-hmm. they're not going to be behind. And these companies, Canopy Growth, and let's say Aurora, that's a hard word to pronounce, Aurora Cannabis, the second biggest in Canada, with a market cap of $11 billion, you know, these guys are using their overvalued, inflated, sky-high shares to make acquisitions. It's currency. They're not issuing debt, and all they're doing is buying companies, and they're issuing stocks because they can. Their stock is worth a lot. So they're buying everybody and everything in every field, medical, research, distribution, dry cannabis, retail. They're trying to have a hand in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And Aurora Cannabis, that's the second one I'm going to talk to you about. They are more flashy, more aggressive. They do a lot of acquisitions. They don't care at the price they're paying. For example, they bought the second or third biggest producer last in the spring, and the transaction concluded over the summer. Med Redleaf or something like that. They bought it for $3.2 billion, right? And usually, when you do an acquisition that size, you talk about synergies. You talk about how they're going to fit in your business model. Talk about how you know it has to make sense, right? You have to explain it. It has to be rational. It has to be logical. And when the CEO or the CFO, I don't remember, was questioned about it, he's like, no, that's our secret sauce. We're not telling you how it's going to happen, all this stuff. So you're like, okay, that's weird. But yeah, these guys are going in full blown, full aggressive. I'll try to send you a chart. If I make an article, I'll put a chart in it of their deals. They're making a lot of deals. And it's a company, obviously a big company, but they're fully legit. But again, do your homework, figure it out what they're about. But yeah, they have a hands in they have a hand in Manipod. And again, the international opportunity, that's what they want. Another producer that's interesting might want to look at is Aphria. $4 billion market cap, smaller. And these guys, they play a different game. They don't want to be like the Canopy or the Aurora of the world. These guys are only focusing on one thing, and that's being the low-cost producer. So they're focusing a lot on costs. It's kind of weird to talk. You know, these guys have they were taking the business model of everybody else, buying everybody else, issuing stocks. Who cares about the price? Who cares about costs? Who cares about synergies and all that stuff? No, no. These guys are going at it from a very disciplined approach. And Aphria, let me just get you the symbol here. It's in Canada. APH.
You know, after the show, just send me
sure.
You know, any articles, symbols, right. anything like that you think is relevant.
For sure. So these guys, like I said, they're aiming at being the low cost producer. So how are they going to do that? Well, they're aiming at the. Focusing on greenhouse versus interior greenhouse for their competitor, and I think it's outside. Their greenhouse costs $55 per square feet compared to the greenhouse for Canopy or Aurora, which costs between $250 and $300 per square feet. So that's huge, right? That's by 20-25% of their cost. And by being outside, well, you got natural light, which again, it costs you less electricity compared to the people growing it on the inside. And also by being outside, you're using a lot less fertilizers. So less electricity, more light, less fertilizer, cheaper cost. So that's their game. I think they know that it's going to be at first, especially for the dry cannabis, it's going to be like a commodity, a cost-oriented game. So they're sticking with their approach. And also what makes this company different, they're cash flow positive. They've been for many quarters. So I know they're doing one thing. They're not doing 40 different things, and they're good at what they're doing. So that's interesting. Another small company, EXO. That's a symbol, H-E-X-O, the hydropothecary. Oh my, I can't pronounce that. Hydropothecary Corp. They're a Quebec-based company. And what makes them different is that they are the exclusive seller for the government of Quebec for the weed. When the government of Canada, government of Quebec open their stores, they're going to be one of the exclusive provider. So that's really good, and their valuation, yes, it's high, but not as crazy as the other guys. Mm-hmm. They just graduated from the venture to the big TSX, so that's good for them. So some of these are the companies I would look at. I want to know more at, but I'm not pushing you to buy any of them. You probably heard of Tilray.
Of course.
Yeah. That's the company that's the startup that's backed by Peter Thiel, the billionaire, the PayPal guy. This company in September was worth about $30 billion for a brief amount of time. Well, what does that mean, $30 billion? This is a company that had $20 million in revenues for the first half of the year. Okay? So, so what happened? Well, Tilray got they grow marijuana in Canada, and it's one of the few pot company listed in the U.S. And the stock exploded when I think it's the DEA approved that they were allowed to export a small amount of cannabis to California for medicinal study, and the market went absolutely crazy. And the company has a small float. They only have 6.5 million shares. So it makes it really hard to buy. So yeah, it's a very, you know, again, don't touch it, don't buy it, but I'm bringing it up because it's in the media and it's taking a huge part of the marijuana related, publicity. So good for them, you know, and good for Peter Thiel, who made more money. And the stock, to give you an idea, here's what happened in 10 minutes. It went from $100 to $300, and it went back to $125. Mm-hmm. That's what happened to the company. That's 10 minutes, 10 minutes, in 3 days. So 100, 300, 125. I think right now they're trading 150. But what are you buying, right? You're buying hope. You're buying potential. You're buying a dream. That's what, and you know, so you have a shareholder class of people that wants to make money quickly, get rich quickly, and they're all jumping on the bandwagon. And I'd like to know how many people actually opened the 10K and read it. I don't think a lot of people did. So these are a couple companies that you know, keep an eye on. If we have time, I want to bring up alternatives, suggestions. This is what I would actually look at. These are companies that I would actually look at, dig deeper. They're not get rich quick propositions, and but they're interesting. If you look at if we go back a bit, if we look at the gold rush or any of these big boom, the people that usually made money are the people that provided the pick and shovels, right? It's not the people going to the mountain and digging for gold. Maybe some of them probably found some gold, but the large majority of the people who did that, they came out broke. And you see this pattern repeating over itself over and over again. You look at it with the dot-com, the internet stocks, real estate in the United States before the crash in 2008. It couldn't go up, right? And we saw it last year with the Bitcoin cryptocurrency mania. Look at it. Look where it is now. It was a great story, right? Like the blockchain. You couldn't go a day without hearing how the blockchain was going to change everything.
I think it's still an interesting story, though.
It is. It's a great story. And but the people who made money are the pick the guys who provided the pick and shovels. Who made money? Nvidia, right? They provided the cards. They did the video cards for the miners. Nvidia is one of these stocks that just went through the roof, and now they have a hand in betting technology. But then anyway, back to the marijuana industry. It's hard to just pick, you know, the right stock, but maybe there's other ways to look at it. For example, I mean, one that made the news recently was Constellation Brands, right? Mm-hmm. So who are these guys? They're the Corona guys. Corona beer, Modelo beer, and they're in wine, they're in beer, they are in hard liquor, and now they are in wheat. So here we go, they're in everything.
Yeah,
it's a great scent company. These guys, they had a stake in Canopy Growth that they bought a couple years ago, and now back in August they just raised it to 38%. They invested $4 billion, and now they own 48% of 38, sorry, of Canopy. And I think they have options or warrants, sorry, to buy more.
And just the thing yeah, too. I don't know which of these companies have publicly traded warrants, but as a warning to American investors, if any of them are just wanting to do something like this, Americans cannot exercise Canadian warrants.
Oh yeah, why?
Just the way the law is.
How can you not exercise them?
I think I might be wrong, but when I was looking at the Partners Value Investments, the warrants,
I
found out that, I mean, the bid-ask spread was crazy. It made it really hard to buy. But if I was in Canada, I would have loved to buy some of those warrants at a good price. So you're basically, you know, you were basically getting warrants on a leverage bet on Brookfield. But so those are actually very interesting if you're a Canadian investor. But as an American investor, I saw it as a problem because the bid ask was sometimes like a 50% spread, and God forbid, if I needed to sell them, right, or I wanted to even cash out, I might get 50% or more discount to the current market value. So I think it's a rule with Canadian exchange. I don't know if that's an exchange rule, if that's some rule by the Canadian government. It was weird, but that's why I know that actually.
It's so if you buy, you're allowed to buy them.
You're allowed to buy them. You're allowed to buy them and trade them. You just can't exercise them.
That is weird. Okay. Yeah. I wonder if the Canadians can buy U.S. warrants and things.
I don't know. I've never heard anything about.
Yeah, I did buy a warrant. I mean, I bought warrants in the past from U.S. companies, and I don't think I ever exercised. I hold them, but sold them. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that was ever a thing I heard of. Okay, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, if I'm wrong on that, if someone finds something that says the opposite, tell me. But I'm pretty sure that from my recollection, like 2 years ago, that was the case.
Huh. Right.
Yeah.
Back to Constellation Brands, Corona. The Corona people, they own 40% of Canopy Growth. Mm-hmm. And now if Canopy Growth is worth 14 billion or 15 billion, well, now you can hold it indirectly, that 40% stake, at a much reasonable valuation. I don't know what Constellation Brands trades at, but I know that marijuana premium is not included in their current multiple. So it's kind of like a backdoor to buying Canopy Growth, right? Especially if they buy the whole company. So that's one way to look at it, right? You want to be in the weed industry. Constellation Brands provide that, and you get the whole package. You get the booze, you get the alcohol, you get the beer, you get Corona, you get all that stuff. Molson Coors, stock symbol TAP. They're another one. It's following the move made by Constellation Brands. They have made a joint venture, a JV with EXO, the one I was talking to you about earlier that only sells to the Quebec government and Ontario government too, but the smaller player. And so they set up a JV with the idea of developing drinks for the marijuana. That cannabis-related drinks, maybe with CAC, maybe non-alcoholic, I'm not sure. It's new. So they made the announcement not too long ago. This, again, that second announcement sent a surge in the price of marijuana stocks, because what you're saying the market is that, hey, look, Molson Coors, Constellation Brands, billion-dollar companies, plus Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola recently said they were exploring something with Aurora. So you got all these big companies, these blue chips. Well, I don't know if Molson Coors are blue chip, but anyway, Coca-Cola and all these guys are saying, hey, this space is legit. This is something we'll look at. So what you're doing is you're bringing institutional investor, you're bringing big investor, you're bringing professional money to say, hey, look, you know what? There's something there. It's not just crackpots looking at that space. We are looking at it too. Mm-hmm. So there's something there. Coca-Cola, they're looking for growth. You know, people are not drinking more soda, so they have to look at different options. What they want to do, from what Coca-Cola disclosed, that they're considering adding CBD, like I said, the non-psychoactive ingredient in weed to sport drinks. So who knows? But again, they haven't said anything. They're just exploring the space. So, you know, maybe Coca-Cola could be an interesting play. By the way, I'm just giving you ideas, right?
Sure. These are not recommendations.
They're not recommendations.
Very clear about that.
Right. It's their ideas. It's interesting to study, to explore, to dig deeper. That's what they are. The investment bank Cowen, which is a small investment bank in the United States with a market cap of about $500 million. Actually, I got the idea from Barron's. It was Barron's pick of the week last week.
Okay.
I'm like, oh, I'm having a podcast, so maybe I should bring it up. Cowen, they...
Big shout out to Barron's, by the way. It is such a high quality magazine. Yeah. What do they call themselves, a magazine or a paper?
I have no clue. I don't know.
I guess it's Barron's Magazine. I think that's what they're called. But it feels like a newspaper. Anyway,
yeah. it's a good magazine.
It's a really good. It's great journalism. Great writing.
So they're Cowen. They're the guys who took Tilray public, and they own a part of it, a small stake, but still. Now Cowen's a low profile investment bank, and they are in the marijuana industry, but they don't have the marijuana premium attached to them. So that's kind of interesting.
Yep.
So that's maybe one way to play it. And Barron's broke down the numbers, but it's pretty cheap. They're just trading at 5x projected 2018 earnings, and they're trading at 80% of tangible book value. So the book value is at $20.40. I think last time I checked, the stock was at $17. Mm-hmm. Because every time Barron's write about a stock, it goes up. But yeah, before the Barron bounce, they call it, I think it was like $15 or $14. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's one way to look at it, to play the marijuana industry deal.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you too. Obviously, with any of these new industries, there's always a bunch of weird, sketchy shit that you see.
Yeah.
I mean, like, just remember with Bitcoin, I mean, it's still happening to some extent, but all the really sketchy ICOs and fraudulent coins and all that stuff. I mean, what kind of red flags do you look at in the marijuana industry? It's like, hey, this is like some scammy, weird behavior going on. What kind of stuff do you look at?
Well, if you look at the financial statements, and this is legal, the Canadian listed companies are using the International Financial Reporting Standards, the IFRS.
But I just want to say also, there's nothing inherently evil or scammy about that, per se.
No, it's not. Because
Brookfield has gotten shit for that, and I thought it was actually some really sloppy reporting on the journalist part, because it did not really... You know, they were almost trying to make it seem like Brookfield was a scam.
Yeah, actually, I was from Barron's, right?
I think so. And yeah. I actually remember reading that and be like, well, if this is a scam, well, they're under promising, over delivering, and it turns out that they typically undervalue things with that reporting standard. So that'd be the dumbest fucking scam in history.
Yeah. So for people who don't know what we're talking about, Brookfield use, because they're a Canadian company, IFRS reporting standards. Now, I'm not going to go into details of what, you know, the in and out of it, but basically...
Because you wouldn't. You would probably know better than most people because of your background in being a business analyst in Canada.
A little bit, yeah. So basically what happened is that people, Brookfield got knock on for how much they were reporting their assets on their books, and some assets were shared with other companies. So company X will have it at this price in their financial statements, and Brookfield will have it at a price much higher. And they were accusing Brookfield of manipulating numbers, because these numbers, when you use fair value instead of GAAP prefers a cost-based approach, right? Mm-hmm. And IFRS is more fair value. They think it's more relevant. So basically, management has to make, you know, several estimates, right?
And GAAP, and just also say, is it GAAP has its, I mean, GAAP, you could say it'd be more conservative in that respect, but it also has its issues. I mean, look at what, like...
Well, sure.
Like, look at what Geico is on the books on Berkshire Hathaway. Like, obviously, that's ridiculous. That it's not obviously worth that little.
Yeah. Look, it's their accounting standards. They're not... There are rules you have to follow, so they're following the rules.
Sure.
And you have to use a certain amount of judgment. So, and the knock on Brookfield was that, is like, look, your numbers are out of whack with that company's number, because there'd be some assets and companies, you know, like a pipeline, I don't remember the names, but this, you know, that company put the pipeline at zero in their, on their financials, and Brookfield will have it like at 400 million. They're staking it. And they're, it's the same pipeline. So what's going on here? You know, are they playing with the numbers? Are they juggling? Are they ripping people off? And Brookfield say, look, we're following our reporting standard rules. Sure, there's some judgment involved into it, but if you look at our history, we have recycled our capital. So basically what that means is that we have sold assets that we had on books at X amount at a higher price than we have reported. And they do this all the time. They sell assets every year, right? And they're selling it at a much higher price than what's been reported.
I wouldn't say always much higher, but it's usually on the higher side.
Yeah. And, right. So that knock on them has been...
Sometimes it's much higher, but sometimes it's not much higher. Sometimes it's a little higher. It averages out to slightly higher. I don't remember. Maybe you're right. Maybe it's significantly higher.
You have to go case by case.
Right,
here.
Yeah.
But the message it's sending is that, look, the assets are real, and the money we're selling them for is real. And, I mean, cash is cash. So it's worth what cash is.
Right.
So basically, that was...
Unless you're a Chinese company. I've seen Chinese companies fake their cash, but that's a different story.
Yes, it is a different story. That would be a good podcast to look into this. But, you were talking about red flags. Look, I mean, the accounting is not a red flag, but you have to know how the numbers are reported. And the cannabis producer, you can read up on this on Google, but the way they report the numbers... They report unrealized non-cash change in fair value. And what happened is it's really weird how it does. They're using a model that's favored by the agricultural industry, which requires companies to place a value on plants while they're still in the ground. So it's like putting a value on eggs that hasn't been hatched yet.
Right.
So what happened, if things don't work out, it's supposed to, then you have to take a big write-off.
Mm-hmm.
And also what it does, there's no financial clarity. So that's one thing I will look at. And it's not, I'm not saying these companies are ripping you off. They're a fraud on that. No, they're not. They're saying we're following the rules. So they also have their non-GAAP numbers,
mm-hmm.
you know, and MDNA, the management discussion. This is where they break out the numbers saying, no, these are non-cash charges and all that stuff. They're trying to break it down. This is where it gets interesting. There's no standardization across the cannabis industry. The way somebody report their margin, Canopy, Aphria, Aurora, they all have different ways. So you're not comparing apple to apple. So every company makes different assumptions and they break out the numbers differently than their competitors. So it's hard to connect. Like one company is saying our cost per gram is 80 cents. And then the other company is saying our cost per gram is $2. Well, these guys are including distribution. These guys are not, you know what I mean? It's
mm-hmm.
So there's no standardization. And it's hard to compare, you know, let's say gram per gram cost, gross profit, and after all the adjustment. I hope they're going to fix that. And they should for
I'm sure they will in time.
Well, yeah. But part also, you've seen these companies before the adjustment have gross profit margin of over 100%. And you're like, what the hell is this? How is that even possible? Part of the idea, they don't want to correct it too much. Yeah, they know it's a problem and we have to deal with it. But we're not in a hurry because we're raising money all the time. We are in capital raising mode. We are buying other companies. We're growing. We need that cash. So if we start, you know, paying attention to what our real gross margin are, well, we don't want our stock to go down and blah, blah, blah. So here's the game. Red flags, dude, this space is out of whack, and there's going to be a correction. There's going to be a correction. I don't know when. I'm not a market timer, but this, you know, what was Mark Twain? History does not repeat itself, but it rhymes. This is the same thing. It repeats itself. It rhymes. Sorry. It's we're seeing the tech bubble, gold, the housing crisis, the cryptocurrency bubble. Same thing. You get this beautiful thesis. You can defend it. You know, technology is going to change the economy. The blockchain is going to change the stock market. It's going to change. It's going to change the way we run our life. Housing prices can go up. You know, you take a good story, and there's some element of truth in it.
Yeah.
And you extrapolate the whole thing to something absolutely ridiculous. And basically, what you're saying is like, look, no price was too much to pay. Doesn't matter. I'll pay, you know, whatever price it needs to. And this is what's going on right now. And there's real questions because the ones I named you earlier, these are the big boys. But there's also a lot of sketchy little companies that are every time the big boy have good news, these guys are benefiting. And there are some serious questions about just how profitable these companies can become after everything's legal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people are also overlooking at the supply of things. I think when you see all these numbers coming out, most predictions are fin to consider the potential price drop you'll see once everything becomes legal. There's not going to be a lack of supply. I don't think there will be. Maybe the first week, but eventually supply will catch up with demand. And the cannabis is going to behave like other commodities eventually. And if there's too much supply, the price will drop. And I don't know if we have that right now in financial models or prediction, if people are even have one. So that's a red flag for me, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't see price of weed going up. And another thing I think that's been overlooked by investors or potential investor is the model that people are selling weed in Canada. So like I said earlier, the province is in charge. Some province will have a private business model. That means stores and all that stuff, and stores run by entrepreneurs, and the government would just take a tax on it, like some alcohol. But in Quebec and some other provinces, they have the government stores. And what's going on when you have a government store is that you have one buyer. What happened when you have one buyer? You dictate the price you're going to pay for.
Mm-hmm.
So these companies that want to sell to these the government-controlled stores have, you know, you can't charge full price. They dictate the game. And if you charge too much, they're not going to buy from you. They'll just buy from the next guy. So you're going to have a market with tons of sellers and a couple of buyers. Because let's say in 2 weeks, I want to buy some. I go to the cannabis, the Quebec store, and that's it. I don't go to these. I don't go to Canopy Growth directly. I don't go to Oro. I don't go all these companies I mentioned to you earlier.
Yep.
They don't sell directly to consumers unless you have a medical prescription. I forgot. You can buy from them now if you have a medical prescription, but once it's legal on 17 for recreational purposes, you can't buy from them either. You have to go directly to your local seller. So these are a couple things, you know. Look, the valuation's out of whack, you have to be careful. You have to figure it out. Look, I mean, if you want to invest, and this is probably the part where people don't like to hear, I'm telling you not to touch the space. And I've been telling, I mean, people probably don't like me anymore because I've been telling people to stay away from 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And during these 2 years, I saw I have friends who invested in Canopy Growth at $10. Okay,
what's the 70, price? Not, yeah,
okay. It's 60 something right now. And they bought it at 10, they bought it at 20, they bought it at 30, they bought it at 40. And you know, I'm like, oh, I'm the investment guy, right? I'm the valuation guy, and I have a friend that just doubled investment like this in 6 months, a year, triple, quadruple. So I don't know why they're listening to me, but you know, I don't think. I mean, what I'm saying, look, if you made money in that space, and you know, good for you. You put your money on red, and red came up. I would just say, take your money, cash out. Good for you, but it's not going to end well unless you have a 20-year horizon. But investors don't have that, especially in that space. So figure out what you're buying, figure out what it's worth, and try to buy it for less. That's what smart investing is. And it's no different in the marijuana industry, even though it doesn't seem like it. Approach it from a business owner point of view, right? Let's say I was going to buy this whole business. That's my approach. Let's, you know, I obviously buy minority stakes in it, but if I was going to buy the whole business, you know, and I have to depend on the cash, you would depend on the cash flow to determine the value of this investment. Instead of what's going on right now, you're depending on future buyers. I'm buying a share at this price with the hope that the next buyer buys it at a higher price than what I bought.
Mm-hmm.
That is the game right now. And it's not a game that's interesting to me. So, you know, do the boring thing. Focus on the assets that's producing cash. And, I mean, that's, you know, is Warren Buffett buying wheat stock? He knows something about investing. I don't see him talking in buying wheat companies. It's not like he likes money.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just be careful how you navigate the space. And obviously, it's not a space where you can pull out a financial model and try to make sense out of it. But use your judgment, do your homework, and do the boring stuff. I don't know. Do you have any questions for me, comments or anything? I've been talking for a long time now.
Yeah, no, no, it's good though. I mean, my only comment is if you are going to invest in this space, you want to treat it with a VC mindset and less of a put something into a financial model, because your model will be wrong.
Well, or take 5%. You know, you want to play this space, take 5% of your cash, your network, and go out, go wild. Go have fun.
I don't know about 5%. If you're willing to lose 5% of your entire net worth, then fine. I mean, for me, it's a 0% position, this whole industry. But I guess what the comment I would make is, if this is something you're going to do, you know, just know any money you put in, you could potentially lose all of it. And if you're okay with that, then do that.
Right. Right. Well, that's yeah. You know, like we say, do your homework.
I'd rather just own Brookfield.
hey, your listener made money on that call. If your listener listened to that podcast we made,
I hate that way of thinking though, because it's only a few months. It could be down 20% this quarter. I don't want to give any credit to that. Let's come back in 5 years and see what the stock price is.
I'm trying to make you look good.
I know. I just don't want to take credit that I shouldn't be taking. So let's come back in 5 years, and if it's had a good rate of return, then I can say, okay, there was something smart about that. Full disclosure, it's a pretty big position for me, and about the same allocation for most of my investment clients too. So I have a lot of skin in the game as well with that. I actually bought some more probably a half hour before we did this show. So I don't expect this to move the market.
Oh, is that why the stock is up?
Yeah, that's exactly. I'm sure it's exactly why that the stock's up. No, but
right. Okay. Yeah. Market mover.
Yeah, clearly.
Well, look, I have to go to daycare soon. And I look, I'm gonna, this was a lot of fun.
Yes, like always.
I like doing this, and let's keep in touch. I'll send you some notes, and maybe your listeners can send notes. I'll try to do an article out of this. Maybe I can. I'm not sure how I'm gonna approach it, but if I get an article out, then you can also link it to your notes. That way, your listeners have more information.
Awesome, perfect.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks, man. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast with Eric Schlein. If you'd like to connect with Eric for questions, comments, feedback, ideas, or to inquire about being on the show, please contact Eric at intelligentinvesting@gmail.com. So, in the words of Charlie Munger, I have nothing to add.